Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Welcome to the Julia Hartley Brewer Daily. If you've missed any of my talk radio breakfast show, don't worry. We've put some of the punchiest bits of this morning's show into a bite-sized podcast, the Julia Hartley Brewer Daily. Enjoy.
Talk radio breakfast with Julia Hartley Brewer and The Times. Be well informed.
Good morning to you. This is Talk Radio Breakfast with me, Julia Hartley Brewer. Thank you very much indeed for your company. Delighted to welcome the Culture Secretary, Oliver Dowden, to the show right now. Good morning to you, sir.
Good morning.
Good morning. Obviously, we have lots to talk about in terms of your particular field of responsibility in terms of culture and sport. But obviously, the big concern for everyone this morning is the announcement we're expecting from the Prime Minister later today about the nation being split up into three tiers, medium risk, high risk and very high risk. And I've gone through what those would all mean for people, what we understand they are likely to mean. We'll get the details later. Can you tell me what scientific evidence there is, though, for a lot of these measures, specifically bans on, for instance, pubs and bars being open and the 10 p.m. curfew, because we've yet to see any real world evidence that these are going to save lives, but we know they'll cost jobs and businesses.
Yes, well, in respect of hospitality, there are a number of risks associated with it. First of all, hospitality involves meeting people that you don't normally meet, and we know that the virus thrives in that kind of social interactions. That's risk number one with it. The second risk is that you can't apply many of the mitigations that you can do usually. For example, clearly you can't wear a face mask when you're eating and drinking. And then thirdly, there is the risk associated with ventilation. Often these hospitality venues are not very well ventilated, particularly as we approach winter and people are not going to be eating outside. So all of those point to a higher level of risk, which is why they feature in the measures that we're taking. But Julia, to your point, I completely appreciate and know the economic consequences of doing this. These are very difficult decisions, but ultimately, if we don't take these actions now to control the virus, we'll have to take further and more draconian measures further down the line.
So it's basically a threat to the British people, that, isn't it? Joe Anderson, the Liverpool mayor, said that this is a sledgehammer to crack a nut. We know, don't we, from the test and trace, the actual real world evidence, that there are barely any cases which can be directly attributed to people being in pubs and restaurants. And if it's an issue of, say, ventilation, well, you know, close down the pubs and restaurants that don't have good ventilation, let the rest carry on. Wouldn't that be the solution?
Well, first of all, to be clear, this is not a threat to the British people at all. It is a reasonable and proportionate set of measures, and you'll see them from the Prime Minister, that balances these competing challenges, which is, number one, we have to keep this virus under control. And the reason why we have to keep this virus under control is if we let it get out of control, not only will it have terrible public health effects, it will also have direct health implications. For example, you saw what happened when the NHS had that strain from COVID patients cancelling elective operations and so on. So I think that these are sensible measures now in order to prevent greater difficulty further down the line. We can see the way that this virus is going. It is rising rapidly, particularly in parts of the north. So it's sensible to take these measures now to get it under control. But at the same time, we are enabling economic activity to continue to happen, including indeed in the hospitality sector. And you'll see that from the Prime Minister's announcement this afternoon.
We had back in September a prediction from Sir Patrick Vallance. Well, no, he said very specifically it wasn't a prediction. He said it was an example scenario, but he chose the example scenario of 49,000 cases every day by 13th of October, leading inevitably to 200 deaths a day by mid-November. It's the 12th of October today. We're on roughly 13,000 cases. We're nowhere near the exponential growth that was predicted, and therefore very, very unlikely, unless things change drastically, to be seeing that sort of death numbers. When you talk about a reasonable and proportionate set of measures, there's an awful lot of evidence that these measures don't fulfil either of those criteria, do they? They go far further than most people would regard as, well, most sensible people would regard as reasonable and proportionate, given the number of deaths and the age of the people who are at risk of dying.
Well, there's a number of points, as you know. I think in respect of what Patrick Vallance was talking about, he was highlighting the risks if we don't take measures to get this under control. It is undoubtedly the case that the virus is rising. I don't think anyone could dispute
rising,
that.
Yes.
And in parts of the northwest of England, in places like Liverpool, we're getting to very high levels. And that is in turn translating through to hospital admissions, and we know that sadly that will translate through to deaths. Now, because of measures that we've already taken, for example, we've had improvements in treatment, we should see lower mortality levels, but nonetheless we will still see rising deaths. I know the huge economic consequences of the measures that we're taking. I desperately do not want us to be taking these measures because I'm acutely aware of both the economic damage and indeed the wider public health damage, mental health and so on, of taking it. But we have to ensure that we keep this virus under control. It is in a situation where it is rising very rapidly, doubling over a period of a week to 2 weeks in many areas. That is not sustainable if you do the maths of how quickly that would spread, and in turn that will go through to hospital admissions and deaths. If we take these reasonable and proportionate measures now, we can keep it under control so that we can continue to balance the economic needs of the nation whilst keeping the virus under control.
Well, of course, we also know the huge costs to jobs, to businesses, and the long-term costs to other healthcare issues and indeed to people's health long-term from an economy that's completely trashed. Now, I know you're talking this morning about a large sum of money to help save many of the theatres, the art venues, the museums, the cultural organisations across England that are desperately in need of help, a £257 million bailout fund that's going to be released as of today, isn't it?
Yes, that's correct. So if you recall, a little while back, we announced that £1.5 billion of support for our arts, heritage, culture and creative industries. These are what make us as a nation. It generates a huge amount of jobs and growth in normal times. So we said we'll help you through this difficult period of COVID. So we're announcing £250 million today, and that will go across the whole country from Beamish through to the Birmingham Royal Ballet through to the Bristol Old Vic, where I was last Thursday. That is both helping to preserve 1,300 institutions up and down the country, so they're there for future generations, but also in doing so will help sustain jobs in the industry as well.
Okay, and hopefully get Panto's back up and running. I think last time you were on, we were talking about saving Panto. Do you think we're going to be able to do that this year?
Well, look, it's a very challenging backdrop, as we've just been discussing, but I've always taken the approach of prepare for the worst, but also put in plans for the best. So, for example, that is why working with Camelot and others, we've already got an agreement whereby Camelot will pay for some of the sort of spare tickets that will be for the seats left when you have social distancing in Panto. So provided we keep the virus under control and we can have social distance performances later this year, some Pantos will be able to go ahead through that. And it's an example of the innovative thinking that we're seeing across sport and the art.
Just finally, I must ask you about the Premier League. There's talk of a power grab by Man United and Liverpool, but money that could end up getting £250 million down to the lower leagues. What do you make of the plan to cut the Premier League down to size to just 18 teams and change the way the funding goes to local clubs?
Well, I really don't think this is the time for having sort of fundamental changes to football and these kind of backroom deals. The challenge here is clear, which is that EFL needs support to keep it going. Now, I know that Premier League and the EFL have been working together to ensure that no club will go under, but nonetheless, they do need to work together to have a comprehensive deal to support sport through this difficult period. Rather than the EFL working with others to come up with this different plan, or indeed the Premier League not properly coming to the table when they've had spent £1 billion during the transfer window, that is more than the next four wealthiest leagues in Europe put together. I think they need to be coming together to solve this problem. And I must say, this is beginning to highlight to me the need to take action in relation to the governance of football if they don't get their act together. And we promised in our manifesto that we would look at a fan-led review. I think unless they imminently sort themselves out, we're going to have to embark on that path.
Online, on DAB, and on the Talk Radio app. Talk Radio.
In the market for investment-worthy bags, watches, and fine jewelry, Rebag is the answer. Rebag is a luxury resale platform where each piece is carefully inspected by experts to ensure quality and authenticity. Use Rebag to buy and sell finds from the world's top brands, including Louis Vuitton, Chanel, and Cartier. Head to Rebag.com to get 10% off your first purchase with code REBAG10. Shop today at Rebag.com. That's REBAG.com. And use promo code REBAG10 for 10% off your first purchase.
Across the UK, online, on DAB, and on your smart speaker, Talk Radio.
Boris Johnson's statement later on today, press announcement at 6 o'clock in the evening for us all to watch on the TV about these new three tiers of local lockdowns. Now, it's expected that Liverpool may be the first city to enter the tier three restrictions, which for all intents and purposes, other than going to work and school, is a full lockdown. Well, the mayor of Liverpool, Joe Anderson, joins me right now. Good morning to you.
Good morning.
There's a lot of confusion here. Is Liverpool? We know there's been a lot of negotiation going on in between Number 10 and the various leaders of the great cities of the north of this country, trying to debate what measures should be appropriate and should be brought in. But will Liverpool accept these measures? Because the mayor of Liverpool City Region, Steve Rotherham, has said that he has made it clear that he does not want to have this these sort of tier three measures, and that he says he's asked for evidence and it's not been forthcoming. But the implication is that you, as the mayor of Liverpool City, that you do want these measures. Which way round is it?
Well, Steve Rotherham and myself and the other leaders of the city region were in discussions with the government all over the weekend, Friday, Saturday and yesterday. And we've agreed a number of things. But, one of the things that we've made loud and clear is that we want support for our businesses here and the impact on them. And also, we have asked for the evidence of why they have a blanket approach. Let me be absolutely clear. I resisted and refused to accept the closure of restaurants. I said a lot of them have been made COVID safe. A lot of businesses have spent money making themselves COVID safe. And I thought it was madness to actually close restaurants completely, totally. And equally similar to some pubs, the government just refused to entertain that idea at all and had made up their mind that this was going to happen. So, when Steve talks about not accepting it, we don't accept their arguments. We don't accept that in the way they are approaching this, a blanket approach, that's the right thing
but
to
you,
do.
But you however, would be willing however, to because, accept pubs closure?
Closing. Well, we've got no choice, have we? That's the point I was just going to make. We've got no choice. The governments are the governments, and if they legislate, which they are going to do, put the orders before Parliament today, debate and discuss them. My point to all the North West MPs is to challenge and resist and demand, a proper full compensation package of furlough to all businesses affected. If we're not able to stop this, and this is my point that I as Mayor of Liverpool or Steve Rotherham or the other leaders across Liverpool City region, we can't stop the government enacting parliamentary measures that put our city in probably 75% lockdown. And That's a fact. It simply is that. So what we've tried to do, what I've done, is put forward proposals to help us deal better with track and trace. And that's what we're doing. They're working with the army personnel, back office army personnel that are in the city this morning as we speak, arriving in the city to work with us, our public health officials, to do a better track and trace system to try and target messages of bringing the virus down. We ask for more resources to do that. We've been granted more resources to do that. We asked for more powers, enforcement powers. We're being given those enforcement powers. But unfortunately, in relation to the furlough scheme, asking for a fuller compensation like the national one we had in March, that was rejected. And also the blanket approach to closing restaurants and bars was rejected. And as I said, there's very little we can do about it, but we argued the case.
Are you planning to join with the Greater Manchester Mayor Andy Burnham and his nighttime economy advisor, Sacha Lord? We're going to speak to you later in the show, who started legal proceedings challenging the government, basically arguing they haven't got the scientific evidence to do this and they can't impose emergency legislation without scientific backing.
Absolutely, we will. And we'll be talking, I'll be talking to businesses later on today in Liverpool to look at exactly what they can do. Look, this is going to be a devastating blow to the economy here, the hospitality economy. I spoke yesterday and said that, you know, it's potentially can damage us in the same way the AC's damaged us. If we're, you know, many of these businesses are absolutely now struggling. We've lost 206 businesses in the hospitality sector in the last 4 months because of COVID. And many more of them are going to go to the wall and not return. And that is going to damage the local economy. And it's going to also damage the national economy. So it's absolutely vital that it's challenged and we look at it again, because it's just a sledgehammer, really, to crack a nut.
Can I ask you, why do you believe that the cases are still going up in Liverpool? What's your best explanation and what do you think the solution should be?
It's not a best explanation. It's a fact. If you look at, you know, we returned to work. Everybody returned to work after the summer. Schools went back in September. Universities have opened again. And students, 20,000 students returning to the city. Schools, as I said, have opened. And that community mix, that means that you know, living cheek by jowl, 70-odd% of our houses are terraced houses, where we've got a population of 500,000 people. It means that the human contact widens and gets more, and therefore the virus which spreads on human contact is able to increase. It's not, you know, rocket science or something that should shock us. If you take the students out of it and you take, you know, the fact that we expected a rise, a spike in numbers because of schools, if you take those figures out, it's probably, you know, nowhere near as bad as it you know, it looks. However, it is a real concern and worry, and we all agree that we've got to try to bring the numbers down, because I'm concerned about the hospitals here in Liverpool being overwhelmed.
Why would they be overwhelmed? They weren't overwhelmed back in March and April when we reached the peak. Why would they be overwhelmed now?
Because we're heading to a winter period where we know that people are going to pick up other viruses.
We've
flus.
Got the Nightingale hospitals. They can go
in
back.
In Manchester, they've got the Nightingale Hospital. In Liverpool, we've got the wards that we've set aside for COVID are 2/3 full. We've got 3,000 people in Liverpool infected at the moment, and that's going up by 700 a week. So if you're telling me to calm down and not worry about that, well, I'm sorry, I won't, because
saying calm down, not worry about that, but it's about proportionate response, isn't it? I mean, no one sensible is saying, don't worry about it. Oh, a few people today. No one sane and sensible is saying that. It's about a rational, proportionate response
And that's exactly what we're calling for. And that's why, you know, a blanket approach, closing restaurants down, which restaurants are probably the safest, you know, venues around. We're closing gyms down when you can't go to a gym unless you're ready to, you know, go in the gym. And then as you come out, and the safe distances within gyms, and then as you come out, the equipment's cleaned. We're closing them down. It just seems to me that this is more about Boris Johnson being able to show that he's reacting and how macho the government is, rather than a common sense approach to this, because, you know, some of those businesses are operating in a safe way.
Online, on DAB and on the Talk Radio app. Talk Radio.
Well, let's talk about the full repercussions of doing an interview, because who knows what's going to happen at the end of this interview. If my interviewee decides to say something that someone listening to it, maybe not even someone listening to it, maybe someone just hears something they don't like and they decide to call the police, will I be facing an investigation for possibly inspiring, I don't know, inciting racial hatred or some other hate crime? Well, that's what happened to my next guest, Darren Grimes. You'll know him, of course, as a 27-year-old who led Believe, one of the campaigns for Vote Leave. He's faced years and years of police questioning and investigations, Electoral Commission and others for alleged wrongdoing involving money for that campaign. Exonerated on every single ground. And yet, the other day, he faces an email and a call from the police saying they want to interview him over something someone else said in an interview that he broadcast. Darren Grimes from Reasoned UK, I'm delighted to welcome you to the show. Good morning.
Good morning, Julia. Thank you for having me on.
I have to say, I mean, it is so bizarre that I am in the 21st century in Britain, not in China or Russia, having a conversation, or in you know, Orwellian 1984, having a conversation with a young man who has started his own YouTube channel, Reasoned UK. You've done an interview with, well, interviews with lots of different prominent people, including, as we all remember back in the summer, with the historian David Starkey, in which he said some pretty unpleasant things. Now, you were criticised about black people. You were criticised for not standing up to him and for nodding along when you were interviewing him. There was a pretty nasty outcry there. David Starkey lost pretty much all of his positions, his fellowships, his all his other work, and has basically sort of been, exiled from polite society. You now have faced a police investigation over that interview. Tell us what happened.
Yeah, so the police contacted us last week, Julia, and asked if I'd come to be interviewed at a police station under caution and threatened with arrest if I refuse. Now, the Public Order Act, Julia, which criminalises the stirring up of racial hatred, it was an act passed by Margaret Thatcher in 1986, and it carries with it a 7-year maximum sentence. That's what I'm accused of. Now, that act, Julia, is intended to preserve public order. It's not actually there to regulate speech and debate. This is an unprecedented use of that legislation, and I really do think it should concern anyone who believes in freedom of the press, even if as an organization as big as Talk Radio to one as small as my YouTube channel. And at a time, Julia, when many in our country are facing uncertainty and financial hardship, you know, you've been talking about that all morning. I can't imagine a more contemptible way for the Metropolitan Police to abuse taxpayer cash by investigating a vexatious claim like this, that I've stirred up racial hatred.
Well, exactly. It's not even the words that you said. It's the idea that you enabled those words to be broadcast because you interviewed someone and you didn't know what he was going to say. And you and I have discussed it since that actually you weren't really. And I've been there, and I'm certainly, I'm 52 and you're 27. You're interviewing someone who is he's a very big ego. He's a very big character. He has been very highly esteemed for many years. And you were just sort of nodding along. Basically, you ask a question, he speaks, you're concentrating on the next question and not really, and checking that the volume levels are okay and it's all the cameras are working, and not really functioning, not really listening to every single word intently. And anyone who's not done this job won't really understand that there's a lot more going on. In my case, I've got people talking my ears sometimes when I'm interviewing as well. You might miss something. But even if you had heard every single word and you completely concurred with every word that he said, and he made this comment, slavery was not genocide. Otherwise, there wouldn't be so many damn blacks in Africa or in Britain, would there? Not a pleasant thing. I mean, the very, very least not a pleasant thing to say. Lots of other things he has said over the years would suggest that his attitude towards people of colour is not what I think most people consider to be acceptable in the 21st century. But you didn't say it. So why are they questioning you for something someone else said? How are you responsible for how someone answers a question?
Well, yes. So Dr. Starkey is obviously one of our country's most eminent historians before he was airbrushed from history altogether. He's being cancelled from every post that he ever had, and he's unreservedly apologised as well. But you're absolutely right that this is police action over an interview with the threat of arrest and imprisonment, and this must, Julia, have serious repercussions for freedom of expression and, in my view, is simply unjustifiable. And look no further than the fact that everyone from a communist like Ash Sarkar to a liberal Democrat like Tim Farron are taking issue with this decision to investigate me for the offence of stirring up racial hatred under the Public Order Act. This is an unprecedented use, as I say, of that act. Yeah. And they're not alone in that view, Julia. The former Director of Public Prosecutions, Lord MacDonald, told the Times yesterday that he believed that the actions of the police here are, and I quote, sinister and foolish and deeply threatening of free speech. And Julia, in a free and democratic society, it's absolutely paramount that journalists and broadcasters, no matter if it's one as big and popular as talk radio or as small and YouTube-based as Reasoned UK, are permitted to interview a wide range of people, including those likely to make controversial remarks, like Dr. Starkey.
Exactly. I wonder when Louis Theroux was interviewing neo-Nazis, and he one of his interview techniques, the reason why people speak so freely to him, is because he sort of just nods along. He doesn't challenge them in a sort of, yeah, it's outrageous, you shouldn't say that. He just says he just wants to hear what they have to say to understand where they're coming from. The Sky News recently interviewed the rapper Wiley, knowing he was going to say anti-Semitic things, and he did, and they published it. I don't recall the police turning up on their doorsteps. The Home Secretary, Priti Patel, yesterday tweeted, decisions of the police to investigate particular cases are clearly an operational matter, but as a general principle, it's important the law protects freedom of speech. But the thing is, this isn't just an operational matter, is it? Your concern is this is actually a vendetta. It's a vendetta from left-wingers, vendetta from Remainers, who still haven't forgiven you for any role that you had in that vote leave and leave victory. You're a young man. I've been at the end. I've been at the wrong end of Twitter campaigns and abuse and lies about me, and it's pretty hard to take. And I'm a haggard old hack, and I've got my husband and daughter, got that support. You're a young man starting out in your career. You've had this since the age of 23. You're now 27 now on your own. You say you're working class lad from a council estate in the north. And how do you cope with the vitriol and the non-stop campaigns against you?
So you're absolutely right. The last 4 years of my life have now been non-stop litigation, and I thought I would have a bit more of a quieter time now, but my concern isn't really about me, Julia. Look, I'm ugly, big and ugly enough to handle these vexatious claims and to be able to fight them. But my problem, Julia, is actually for the repercussions on, smaller podcasters or those seeking to do interviews who don't have a public platform that like I do, who aren't able to reach out to Toby Young and the Free Speech Union that I'd be absolutely lost without right now. And my real and genuine concern are the repercussions on those sorts of people. Ian Dale Saturday, published a piece for the website Reasoned in which he said, will the next generation of political commentators, will there even be a next generation of the sort of Darren Grimes commentators who say culturally conservative things and have culturally conservative views, because they'll genuinely fear cancellation or litigation. And the problem is, Julia, that we find ourselves in the absolutely bizarre situation where politics is now fought through either vexatious claims through the police, through our court system, Gina Miller and all the rest of it. And politics isn't fought through free speech and democratic means anymore. People make vexatious claims against people. They're serious litigators now. And actually, yeah, I think we need to have a conversation.
Absolutely.
And I know the likes of Ben Bradley
is... Yeah, well, no, we'll have to leave it there. I mean, he's been very good on this. But again, this is about shutting down debate rather than actually having the debate and winning the argument. You just simply shut down what anyone else says.
Online, on DAB and on the Talk Radio app. Talk Radio.
Thanks for listening to the Julia Hartley Brewer Daily. If you liked what you heard, please subscribe and give me a good review. And don't forget to catch me on the Talk Radio Breakfast Show every weekday from 6:30 until 10.
When everyone's on the same page, getting things done at work is easy. No matter what you do or what industry you're in, how you communicate is key. Everything you type is equally important to collaboration, and Grammarly can help. Think of it as your AI writing partner, empowering you to communicate effectively and efficiently so you can make a bigger impact in the workplace. 96% of Grammarly users say it helps them craft more impactful writing. And as the gold standard of responsible AI, Grammarly is your secure AI writing partner that allows your team to make their point and move faster. By understanding your writing in context, Grammarly provides relevant, personalized suggestions. And with tone suggestions, you can navigate even the most difficult work conversations. You can also save time from spending hours editing drafts to just seconds with one click. Sign up and download Grammarly for free at grammarly.com/podcast. That's grammarly.com/podcast. Easier said, done.
When you make decisions for your company, you look for the no-brainers. And if you have a lot of mailing to do, Stamps.com is the ultimate no-brainer. It streamlines your processes to make your business more efficient, which makes you less busy. Mail checks, invoices, legal documents, and everything you need to keep your business running with Stamps.com. Seamlessly connect with every major marketplace and shopping cart. Schedule package pickups and see your cheapest and fastest shipping options from different carriers. With rates up to 89% off USPS and UPS rates. And with the Stamps.com mobile app, you can take care of mailing and shipping wherever you are. Make the same no-brainer decision as over 1 million other businesses with Stamps.com. Sign up with code PROGRAM for a 4-week trial, plus free postage and a free digital scale. No long-term commitments or contracts. That's Stamps.com, code PROGRAM.